This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It happened on Saturday night here in the city. We bring on Eric Hasseltine, the radio play-by-play voice of the Memphis Grizzlies. He joins me now. Eric, how's it going? How was your weekend?
It was good. I'm walking by a shop called It's Sugar, so I'm trying to avoid that. I don't think that's good for my diet, right?
Yeah.
No, it was a good weekend. I mean, obviously, game Friday against the Cavs, you saw what happens when you play a high-level team. And I didn't think the Grizzlies played poorly, Gabe. I just thought that they didn't make their open shots.
Right.
You know, Dez Bain and Luke Kennard are 0-for-8 combined, and there were five missed, you know, what we call bunnies inside of 5 feet that really weren't, you know, totally contested. But you saw how good that team, you know, Cleveland can be when they start really directing you where they want to go. I thought just the missed shots kind of led to other defensive breakdowns because you're frustrated, and that's understandable. But, you know, that's the way this team's been, and they bounce right back. I thought they played fantastic against Miami, and then obviously the celebration was, you know, everything you hope for. I think, the third go-around for the organization, having a little more experience doing it certainly helps. And, you know, a well-deserved honor for a guy and – you know, that meant so much to the organization and the city. And you just don't see that. You know, you don't see guys that hang their hat on defense that are guards that impact a team or a franchise the way Tony did very often. It's a rarity. You know, usually when you think of defensive players in the NBA, you think bigs. You don't think of guards, guys that impact the game the way he did. And so I just thought it was awesome. Awesome to see the guys that came back to support it. And you know, he's Tony. He's
yep.
Probably certifiably insane, but he's our certifiably insane, and we love him for it.
That's a great way of putting it. And I will say, I know there's probably FCC regulations, WMC and FanDuel Sports Network need to work through, but I will say, yeah. I of all jersey retirements I have seen with my two eyes, that was one of the best I've ever seen, just because you needed it with Tony to be real, raw, unfiltered, and they allowed it to be that. Now, I understand they're probably going to have to deal with some FCC stuff on the back end, whatever that looks like, if people are complaining, but that's how that had to be, no? I mean, that felt so genuine.
It was after 10 o'clock. We'll let it go. Like, come on, let me be the first as a parent to tell you that, as a parent to tell you that 13-year-olds have heard and said that those words plenty.
And Eric, okay? You know what? It's always easy to just change the channel. If you're offended and you feel the need to go report whatever, you know, news organization or WMC or whoever's carrying it, then just change the channel. It's not for you.
Yeah. That's kind of the way I look at it. And look, do you have to use those words? No. But if that's part of, you know, who we are and the emotions. Okay, I'm not one to judge. We all used them plenty, maybe even sometimes on the radio and had a delay button
on
that
accident,
we were able
yeah.
to hit. And, yeah, on accident, only a couple times, but it's happened. And no, it was genuine and it was real. And, you know, to see Derrick Rose and Paul Pierce and then, you know, to look over my shoulder at one point and there's Tony with Mark and Zach and Rudy Gay and just the memories that group brings back, you know, it was wild, man. It's having been there through all of it, watching the first playoff run, you know, happen, losing Don Poyer. And then after that, just being bad. I mean, they were just a bad basketball team. They were making moves to, save money. They were making moves to clear flexibility. You know, the running joke was, who are we trading this player for? You know, more flexibility. What is he going to bring to the table? What does flexibility do for us? And, you know, can he rebound? No, because he's flexible. And so Michael Eisley, to his credit, said, give me 3 years and I'll give you a winner. And he took a chance on Zach Randolph. He had acquired Marc Gasol. Mark stood up at a meeting when they were discussing trading Mike Conley for Ramon Sessions and said, that's not the guy you trade. That's the guy we win with.
Right.
Let him grow. You know, you made the choice to get rid of Kyle, which was tough. I mean, you're going to have two guys that have had, you know, borderline Hall of Fame like careers in terms of the number of years and the numbers they put up that on the roster at the same time. And they, one of them had to go to spread his wings. And then you get Tony. And, you know, look, I vividly remember, and I know Chris was telling this story throughout all the presentations in the movie, being on his show as a weekly guest, a biweekly guest twice a week, and him just going, if this dude was good enough to guard Kobe Bryant in the finals, why is he not good enough to play for Lionel Hollins? This makes no sense. And then he gets his shot, and then it's just like, whoa. What was that? And I see the highlights and you remember, you go back and it jogs the memory of the games. And I remember walking into that Oklahoma City game and thinking, oh man, they are coming for us. They're trying to put us in our place, trying to show us we're not ready. Tony's going to have to step in. We're missing some key guys. And when I tell you he made life miserable for those guys, it was remarkable.
Right.
I mean, just to watch it, we walked out of there going, what just happened? And Rob told me about the interview and, you know, obviously I didn't get to see it. And I was like, that's so funny. Cause I thought for sure he meant to say all heart, grit and grime, like getting down and dirty. And he was about the grind. It was actually what he wanted to say. And then you think of the other moments that were referenced, the Hateful Eight game and Cleveland and you know, their Dave was talking about, they're laughing at us. We got like barely enough guys to do layup lines and those eight guys. And Tony was the big reason why I went out and kicked the Cavaliers butts up and down the court, and LeBron played, and LeBron is looking around going like, what is happening? And it was just awesome. And just the energy and the passion. Now he also knew, like, you might catch him on a bad day. That was the day you didn't talk to him. Like if you kind of saw that the little gleam in his eye, you're like, yeah, I think I'll just give him a head nod today and not try to engage him in any conversation, because Tony was locked in and you didn't want to break that.
Now, fully admitting, you know, obviously didn't get to the city of Memphis till 2013, and a sure. lot of this was happening, and I wasn't necessarily around to you know. Pay attention to all the dirty details, but you know, the Lionel Hollins story that Tony Allen, you know, told about how Lionel didn't want to play him and he had yeah. to earn his respect and everything. When Tony Allen got to the city of Memphis and was a part of the Grizzlies, what was the real expectation for what he was going to be for the team?
No, a lot of people thought that he was a piece, because if you'd gone back the year before, the Grizzlies were in a position to challenge for the eighth spot. And I remember the game, and they were playing Portland and had a 10-point halftime lead. And they're like, okay, you get this game against the Blazers, you get two of the next three, which if I remember were like winnable games, this was the thought process. You can get yourself where you're in play. And when I tell you the Blazers came out and ran a layup line against the Grizzlies in the second
right.
half, I mean, it was just like Damian Lillard to the bucket, with maybe me defending him, and I was sitting at the broadcast spot, and I was like, what is going on? And, you know, they said, we need help defensively. We got these young players You know, we've got a young big that can defend, but, you know, Zach Randolph was never known for his defense. Rudy Gay was never known for his defense. Mike Conley was still, you know, growing into a physical man. You know, you forget sometimes these guys come in at 19, they're going against 27-year-olds. That 27-year-old's got grown man strength, and that there's a difference, as you know.
Yep.
And so they just felt like this could be a piece that could elevate you there. And then he's not playing because he drafts Xavier Henry, who had a lot of, you know, upside potential, they thought. And they were looking for somebody to kind of be that dog, that Bruce Bowen type guy at the time. And so they bring in Tony, and he can't shoot a lick, apparently, in training camp. And Lionel's down on it. And, you know, to his credit, Lionel's a guy that sticks to what he believes. And if you have to earn, if you make the wrong impression, you've got to fight to get it back. I get that. I got no problems with that. But he's also, to his credit, the one that when he says, okay, now you've gotten my attention, so hold it. And when you do that, he's on your side. And, you know, that's why he was such a great fit for that group. And, you know, you look back, the league was changing. You had this young emerging superstar in Kevin Durant. You had Kobe, Kobe was on his way out at the time, and, you know, LeBron's taking the torch, and the game is speeding up, and we're moving towards more shooting, and here come the Grizzlies saying, you're going to get in a fight with us, basically. We're going to get in a street fight. You're going to feel it. You're going to feel us every second of the 24-second shot clock, and then we're going to go down and execute offensively. The wild thing to me about that group, Gabe, was, you know, after Lionel and then, you know, went on to other things and Dave Yeager took over, their offense wasn't as bad as people would make it out to be. They just would play defense on you so hard you couldn't get a shot. So the possessions just became less and less. So the scores are going to obviously be lower. But to me, like, their offense, when it was executing, it was good. It was good. And even with Tony and, you know, Tony at times, you know, had some big offensive plays for all the great things he did defensively. He had the moments where you wanted to pull your hair out because he took a bad shot. But there were other times where teams just left him alone, and he was like, okay, I'll do this. And so it was just such a, you know, blessing to be a part of that.
Yeah, and there's only one more of these that we're gonna have in the future, Mike Conley. That'll be a fun one.
Yeah,
but I'm hoping that's a massive celebration because it's the last one. It's the last one we'll get to see for a while. It's been nice, at least the past five or so years, to, you know, while this team that we have currently is growing up in front of our eyes, to still be able to reminisce on what grit and grind meant to the city and how much, quite frankly, it changed, like, the complexion of the view of the city of Memphis. It really went hand in hand.
Well, there was a lot of talk around the league, and I'm not trying to speak ill of Memphis, but there was a lot of talk around the league, like, is this truly an NBA city? Is this franchise going to be able to survive? You know, after the 3-year playoff run, there were a lot of empty seats. It was a hard ticket to sell because you got to remember back at that time, John Calipari had the Tigers at the top of the college basketball world. I mean, they were in the national title game against Kansas. They were, sorry to bring up a bad memory, Tiger fans, but they were constantly in the top five. They were playing in Conference USA and drawing 17,000 people a game, sometimes 18,000, and they're playing like Charlotte or UTEP. Nobody cared, but they were so good. They were must-watch basketball. And I just remember feeling like, gosh, you know, if we could just get this team a couple of the right pieces, get them to where they're competitive in a playoff team and this Tiger team stays there, this would be such an amazing place to be for basketball. And in comes this group, and where the Tigers were flashy and energetic and up and down the court and number one draft picks, the Grizzlies are just this, hey, here's four guys together. Only one of them was a high draft pick. The other three have had to fight for everything. One's been known as a little brother to an NBA star. One barely made it out of Chicago, you know, to be able to play basketball. The other, you know, was kind of looked at as a one and done that might have been a bust, and his attitude was going to get him in trouble. And somehow these four guys just meshed and came together and brought their teammates with them as well. And everybody said, hey, Memphis is a place now. Memphis is a place where it's hard to go win. And that was not a thing before those guys got this thing rolling the way they did. And, you know, they had a lot of praise and a lot of accolades. They had to kind of break it down and build it back up. They got very fortunate with the draft and got a couple of guys now that are leading the way, and then did what this team has had to do over the years, is find those hidden gems, guys like Desmond Bane, you know, guys like finding Marc Gasol, like picking up Tony Allen, and, you know, these guys that you pick up that contribute and help you become high level. And so, yeah, it changed the perception for sure, my friend.
Now, I know it was a 1-1 weekend, and the loss against the Cavs hurt to a certain extent, especially with Ja dropping 44. But that was a very positive sign from Ja Morant, to say the least. 44-8-7, two turnovers, 17-for-22 from the field, getting to the free throw line at a high level. I know he's getting, you know, he sat out the game against the Heat. He's going to sit out a game tonight against the Sacramento Kings, but the whole is Ja back thing. I think he answered that pretty clearly on Friday night.
Yeah, I lost like a lot of that. You turned into a robot that apparently has been at the bar all day. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know if the cell service in Sacramento is just terrible.
Well, basically what I'm saying is Ja Morant, even though that loss on Friday hurt to a certain extent, it's another loss against one of the best teams in the NBA. Ja Morant did prove the question we've been asking his Ja back. It feels like he answered that question pretty clearly.
Yeah, it looks like he's playing with that joy again, and I think that's a good thing, obviously. But, you know, there's going to be some soreness, and you got to make sure this guy's ready. You're in a home stretch. You got this 5-game trip kicking off tonight. You come home for 3, you're back out for 3, you come home for 2, and then, you know, 1, and then a road game, and then back for home game to close it out. So, look, this is going to be you got to lock in. You're scoreboard watching. You're locking in. You're checking all these other games, and you can't let opportunities slip away. But to get to where you want to go, you got to make sure you're as healthy as you can be mid-April for sure.
Yeah. This Western Conference race is ridiculous, though. Let's be honest there. Lakers one game back from the Rockets, Nuggets, and Grizzlies, but all three of those teams tied at 43-25. So every night means so damn much. It's insane.
And you see Denver loses to Washington. How does that happen on their home court after they come
Alex
back?
Alex Saar had a hell of a game, and he got after Jokic. Jokic had a good game too, but Alex Saar, he showed that there is a certain shortcoming to Nikola Jokic's game that you can't expose at times.
Well, and there's something to be said about young teams that get better as the year goes along, where they struggle in the early part of the year. You catch them at the end of the year, that can be different. So we're going to see who's going to rise to the occasion and who's going to look at a game and go, I hope that doesn't cost us, home court down the road. So hopefully that's not the position the Grizzlies are in.
Yep. Now, G.G. Jackson, let's talk about it. He's designated for assignment with the Memphis Hustle. I think I know why that is the case. Defensively, he's been not just bad, but seemingly lost, just not in the right spots. And we don't doubt like the opportunity he has to become a mainstay on this Grizzlies team. He's 20 years old. He can score with the best of them. He's got a bunch of natural ability. But the defense he's been playing, there's just not a whole lot of excuses for being out of place as much as he is. I mean, I'm going to bring it up a bit after you, but there's a clip going around in the Heat game, and I know they handled business in the Heat game. But there's a clip going around where he's got Davion Mitchell coming across half court. I'm sure you remember it. He goes under a screen that Kelo Ware's setting, and Davion Mitchell just takes a warm-up jumper right in his face. That's happened way too often when G.G. Jackson's on the floor.
Yeah, there were some mistakes. Look, sometimes this happens. You just got to hit a reset button type thing, get back, find the your confidence, your level of locked in, so to speak. And make it work. I hope he's only there a short while, and he comes right back, and we see him right back here in Memphis. But because he's got talent, but young players go through this sometimes, and you forget this dude is barely 20 years old. There's still a very high ceiling for that young man, and I have no doubt that he'll go down and figure some things out, and try to help the Hustle a little bit in their final stretch, and be right back up with the big boys.
Yeah, but what do you think about him by the time we get to the playoffs? I mean, it doesn't seem like right now he's going to be a playable piece for this team. Feels like a guy like Lamar Stevens, who got signed for the rest of the year, is a guy who will get more minutes in those situations because of his veteran presence, understanding what he's supposed to do on the defensive end, even though he's been here for a short period of time.
Yeah, physicality for Lamar is a good thing. So, you know, that was the open spot. You had it. You were going to let Johnny Davis go. I think getting guys acclimated. This system's not easy, you know, to run. We've seen that. It takes a minute to really understand what the expectations are on the offensive end. So, I think depth is a nice thing to have, but the game is going to slow down dramatically when playoff time comes. You're going to see a lot of high pick and roll. You're going to see a lot of physicality, and you're going to have to have the guys there to do it. The game's going to slow down. You can't overly speed it up. You can still play with pace, but that's the way playoff basketball always is. That's why they talk about it being more physical, and it's a different level. So we'll see that. We'll see that coming certainly. And hopefully we see it with an opening games 1 and 2 right there in FedEx Forum, and they have home court advantage no matter who the opponent is.
Yeah, how do you think they'll manage the rest of the season, though, with all these teams that are just jumbled up between 2 and 5?
I think you have to manage it with the expectation of trying to keep guys as right as possible. I do think you need to compete with the upper echelon teams. And when you see that Laker game, will LeBron be back? If he's back, how do you go about it? You get Boston, you get the Golden State Warriors. That's the 3-game homestand when you return. The Thunder, the end of this trip. The main thing is, in all honesty, Gabe, I think you take care of that by taking care of nights like tonight, nights like Wednesday. Get one in L.A. against the Clippers if you can. You could be staring at a 5-game win streak potentially. But you got to take care of the 48 ahead. I've always been a big believer. If you start thinking about how are we going to do this, how are we going to do that, you're not focusing on the task at hand. Focus on the task at hand tonight. When nagging injuries come up, I think you err on the side of caution. You know, long ago, Lionel Hollins with that group sat Tony Allen and Zach Randolph in a 2-game road trip to end the season. And people were all over him. Yeah, well, good luck with that. You're going to get the Spurs. Way to do that, because I think they gave the Blazers the Lakers by winning or something. And Blazer fans were all upset and yada, yada, yada. Turns out it was the right move because Zach and Tony got healthy and they ended up upsetting the Spurs that year. Now, is that always the case? No. I think you have to be sharp, too, especially if you're not in the play-in tournament. You have a full week off, and you have to remember that, and you have to find a way to keep that edge. I think we saw that in college football this year in the playoffs. So there's that delicate balance. But I think right now, do your best in these games against teams that are below 500. It puts yourself in a position where home court, it's a lock, and it's not going to be a lock right away because you got those four teams battling, or you know, for 3 spots. So, but you got to win the ones that you're supposed to win, and that'll be the key.
So, if the season ended today, they would be playing the Lakers in a first round matchup. Now, luckily, the season doesn't end today. What are your thoughts on the Lakers in general? Connor and I have been discussing this. If they're fully healthy, you feel okay about them, but they do have a fragility. You know, Jackson Hayes gets out, and Alex Lynn has to fill in. And I don't know if you've been watching Alex Lynn. Might be the worst rotational big in the NBA right now. But, like, what, the fragility of the Lakers is something I can't get out of my mind. One injury, and it feels like everything is off the table.
Yeah, I agree with that. However, I just refuse to look at that. The guy who is the one dude that I think has ever come close to defying Father Time and going, yeah, I'm picking against you now.
right.
Because he's so good. He's still so good. And he's still, you know, whether you like him or hate him, LeBron James is just phenomenal. He just is. But now you add Luka Doncic. The size factor is big. You know, them not getting that deal done with Charlotte, I think, was really big. Because if they had gotten the big from Charlotte, Mark West, right? Mark Williams. I always say Mark West, who was a big in the 80s. If they had got Mark Williams, that was massive because he's good. But, you know, it doesn't happen. Now, like you said, you got Jackson Hayes. Now, how does this high pick and roll, slow it down type playoff style that teams are going to run, that Denver will execute, that Oklahoma City will execute, or, you know, or do teams try to run at them? I think they're dangerous. I know some people are like, they're not a threat when it first happened. Now you see them play. Well, they're a threat. I think all of those five teams are a threat. I think even the Grizzlies are a threat. You know, people have talked about the Grizzlies' record against, you know, teams above 500. They're all a threat. They're all really good. And I would not write out Minnesota either. I think when you look at those top six, when you get past Minnesota and Golden State, who would probably be, you know, one of those two is probably going to be seven, you're looking at tough out no matter what. And so 2-7, 3-6, 4-5, not going to surprise me if it's an upset in any of those series. And, you know, the Lakers could very well make a deep run. They very well could get to the finals if they do. Nico may be looking for employment relatively quickly.
I think he should be anyway, but what I mean, it is what it is. I don't think the Lakers should make a run, and then the Mavs should make a decision. I think they should make a decision anyway.
Yeah, Nico's. It was interesting being there, and I hate that for, you know, some people I know that work there and their fans. You know, these are the things that happen sometimes in pro sports, but they've certainly handed the Lakers an opportunity to make a run that a lot of people didn't think they were going to make before that.
Yeah, bailed them out. We've talked about it. Bailed them out completely. But, Eric, I'll let you get to it, man. Appreciate it. Have a good call tonight.
Thanks, brother. Be well.
Yes, sir. He is the radio play-by-play voice for the Grizzlies Radio Network. That would be Eric Hasseltine. Really fun weekend that we just discussed. I'm sure this will be up relatively soon on 929ESPN.com. But, again, that was Eric Hasseltine. Very happy he could carve out a little bit of time with us. Now let's go ahead and grab a break, and we'll get to the Blitz coming up next. We have J.B. Bickerstaff with an unbelievable press conference. So that we'll talk about that after the Pistons played and lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And, of course, we're going to have to talk about G.G. Jackson. He was assigned to the Memphis Hustle. What are the reasons for that? What do we expect from him in the future? We'll discuss as well. But you're listening to the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM, ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
And always remember that the Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. Connor, what we got?
Today, G.G. Jackson was assigned to the Memphis Hustle after a tough stretch of basketball, most notably on the defensive end. What should we make of this?
He's a 20-year-old. That's what we should ultimately make of this.
Right.
He's a 20-year-old who didn't start the season coming off a big foot injury. You know, his body's failed him to a certain extent. He's not used to the way things need to be at the NBA level when you're a winning team. We saw with a losing team he was great. He was all rookie. First team, about 14 points per game in a 27-win season. When he got all the opportunities, he got to be the volume shooter that he's known to be. We know he can do it in a losing situation. But in a winning situation, when your role is smaller and not as expanse as it was, as expanded as it was in a 27-win season, he struggled. I think it's that simple. That doesn't mean that I think G.G. Jackson's never going to figure it out.
Right.
I fully expect him to figure it out. But the truth of the matter is, he's been bad. He's been bad. And it's not about his offense. I do think I have some problems there as well. He can put the ball in the hoop. He can shoot a three ball. He can get to the rim a little bit better. He can put the ball on the ground. Like, I respect that. The one problem I have on the offensive end is he's not necessarily a connector. He can be a little bit of a black hole when he gets the ball and he tries to go score. That's my biggest issue. But I do like most of the things he does on the offensive end. The problem, Connor, he is really bad on the defensive side of the ball. And this is an organization that puts a lot of weight on the effort, the intensity, the attention to detail you have on the defensive side. There is a clip going around that I just cannot ignore. In that Heat game, I know the Grizzlies handled business, won that game relatively handily. But there's a clip going around where he's covering Davion Mitchell just about full court. Davion Mitchell crosses the half-court line. There's a screen, high ball screen from Kelly Ware, and he goes under it on Davion Mitchell, who is clearly a guy who can put up a three. If you give him a wide-open warm-up jumper, he will knock it down. And, of course, he knocks it down. That's the type of thing that gets you sent down to the G League. That's the type of thing that makes you play with the Memphis Hustle. When you don't have attention to detail, there's no way that Taylor Jenkins and that staff is teaching him to go under screens when he is covering Davion Mitchell. There's just no way. And that's not the only example. There's a million other examples in this stretch of basketball we've seen from G.G. Jackson where defensively he's just lost.
Right.
I don't think it's that he's too stiff or that he doesn't have the upside from an athletic standpoint to be a good defensive player. I really think it's about attention to detail, locking in on your assignment, and understanding what's expected of you. And the only way to get through to a guy like that who is struggling on the defensive end with attention to detail is to give him an assignment. Hey, work on this with the Memphis Hustle. Make this your point of you know, this is the point of contention that's keeping you off the floor on a consistent basis with the big club. So make sure you have a point of emphasis by the time you get down with the Memphis Hustle. Get better at defense. Then we can play you on the big club. But right now, defensively, he is just an absolute problem out there when he plays with the Grizzlies.
Right. There's no reason to overreact to this by any means because it is very simple and very clear that he is going down there because of defense. That is the main reason I think he's going to be down there. I do think he can work on his playmaking a little bit. And like you said, the concern with G.G. Jackson, none of it really comes from his ability to put the ball in the basket. We know he can do that, but he needs to fill out the rest of his game a little bit more. And I think you were very fair bringing up his injury. He's a 20-year-old basketball player that came off of a major injury. He's trying to learn a new system with the Memphis Grizzlies, and it can be difficult to pick that up. We've already heard from some of the veteran players that it took some time for everybody to pick that up. But with G.G., when you're watching the games, it has just become apparent that he is an issue on the defensive end, and teams are beginning to hunt him a little bit. And that's what you do not want right now, especially when you're trying to win basketball games. And I think that giving his minutes right now to players like Lamar Stevens and Vince Williams bodes better for the Grizzlies, especially on the defensive end. We know that Lamar Stevens can have an impact there. We also know that Vince Williams can have an impact there. And to your point, the Grizzlies put an emphasis on defense. And I understand that some of the guys that are getting minutes, too, aren't the best defenders in the world, but one of them's the best three-point shooter in the NBA, and I think that Luke's defense is better than people give him credit for. He's not a traffic cone out there like some people try to act like he is. He also is a playmaker on the offensive end. He brings more to the table than just putting the ball in the basket every once in a while. And with G.G., like you said, he's a 20-year-old. There's no reason to panic over this. He's gonna develop over time. It's been a difficult season for him. And I just think that he has got to figure out where to be most notably on the defensive end. It's not just him going under screens. It's just he's sometimes just in the wrong spot completely.
Yes.
He doesn't have defensive instincts yet. And that is what needs to develop. He needs to be able to anticipate what the guy he's going to defend is doing. He gets lost sometimes. He'll turn his back to a defender. They'll get an open cut. We've seen a few times where he doesn't understand when he needs to switch, when he doesn't need to switch. His communication with his teammates isn't necessarily there. But again, this is a 20-year-old who is extremely talented. I still think that he can be a part of this team moving forward. He just needs some developmental time, and sending him down to the Hustle, I think, is a great way to allow him to do that in a non-pressurized situation.
Yeah, and the biggest thing that I've seen from the staunch G.G. Jackson supporters that feel like he needs a lot of run with the big club, with the Memphis Grizzlies, they'll look at Luke Kennard and they'll be like, he's bad at defense, too. Well, one, he shoots 45% from three, like you mentioned. But also, when I watch Luke Kennard play defense, he's rarely out of place. Is he a traffic cone if you allow him to play one-on-one defense and he's hugged up on the perimeter? Sure. But he's in the right spot. The problem with G.G. Jackson is he's never in the right spot. He's never doing the right things when he gets a ball screen. Luke Kennard can navigate those things better than G.G. Jackson because he's a vet, because he's learned, because he's been in the league for a while. I don't think it's a surprise, but I want people to understand that. The reason G.G. Jackson's been so bad on defense, it has nothing really to do with his natural ability,
right,
with his athletic ability. It has to do with being in the right spot, paying attention to what your assignment is, and executing said assignment. I understand that Luke Kennard has athletic issues that keep him from executing his assignment, you know, time in, time out, when he's on the defensive end of the floor. But at the same time, he's in the right spot. He understands what's supposed to be done. Can he execute it all the time? No, but at least he is in the right spot making some things happen. And I do think it does matter. He shoots 45% from three. That matters. He scored 30 points off the bench the other night to help to will the Grizzlies to a win. So, you know, those comparisons, I get where people are coming from because Luke Kennard is not a talented defensive player. And
he stays in front of his man, though. He'll stay in front of his man.
You know that that's the biggest issue with G.G. Jackson, but the big difference is G.G. is out of place. Luke Kennard's at least in the right spots. That means something to a coaching staff that's really trying to emphasize defense as we get later in the season.
JB Bickerstaff gave us the rant of the year against the after the Pistons game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here is what he had to say.
I'm extremely proud of the way they continue to compete. I'm disgusted by the way that game was officiated. The level of disrespect was above and beyond. They have a guy fall down and trip on his own teammate's foot. They review us for a hostile act. They throw an elbow to our chest, neck area. I ask for him, at least take a look at it, right? Just show us the respect to take a look at it, okay? No one would take a look at it, okay? The disrespect has gone far enough, and I'm not going to allow our guys to be treated the way that they were treated tonight, okay? I tried to have a conversation with official. The official was arguing with Mark. I say his name one time, and he screams at me and tells me that's enough, right? We understand that we play a style of ball that's physical. It's on the edge, right? I coach my ass off with a passionate way. I'm into the games. Our players are into the games. We understand that, right? But we deserve a level of respect because we're competing our tails off and bringing something positive to this league, right? We're growing young players. Our young players are competing their tail off. The least that they could do is get the same respect that everybody else in this league gets and get refereed the same way that everybody else in this league gets refed. And enough is enough of it. And what you saw tonight was disgusting. It was a disgusting display of disrespect towards our guys and what we're trying to do.
Hey, what you heard at the end is a crumbled up stat sheet and JB Bickerstaff leaving the podium. So that's... That was that. Very strong words.
That was incredible.
Staff. And he's going to get fined, there's no doubt about it, by the NBA. But
100K.
I think he's 100% right. My first reaction to this, though, is I was like, that, you know, that tracks. A guy that just played Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, yeah, I can get that frustrated, too. I think everybody who plays that Oklahoma City Thunder team gets that frustrated. But it was an abomination, that game. If you just go back and look. Cade Cunningham gets ejected for a technical foul because he's complaining about a call when the Oklahoma City Thunder do the same thing on the other end. You have Dennis Schroeder get a technical foul call that completely changed the game. It was a six-point game. Troy Pistons had a chance to go win that thing, and you get taken out of the game because Cade Cunningham and Dennis Schroeder late in that game both get a technical foul call. And here's the thing. Free throw disparity sometimes can be a misnomer because, you know, you look at a free throw disparity – and you could just take it at surface level and say, well, this team got more free throws than this team. That was an abomination. But sometimes, you know, like with the Celtics, they take 63 threes. They shouldn't get as many foul calls. They're not attacking as much.
Right.
If you watch the Detroit Pistons, all they freaking do is attack the rim. That's all they do.
Not a team of shooters.
They do not shoot. They attack the rim. And the free throw disparity, considering the style of play the Detroit Pistons have under J.B. Bickerstaff, was inexcusable. You cannot give the Thunder, who attack a fair amount but a little bit less, 22 free throws, and the Detroit Pistons, whose only way to go score is attacking the rim full force, 13. It should never look like that. So I agree with J.B. I'm glad he called it out. The Thunder have gotten away with a whole lot. SGA, I think he's very talented at drawing fouls, but they give him way too much of a superstar whistle. I am in full agreement with JB Bickerstaff. I thought the way that game was officiated was disgusting.
It was a perfect rant, and it was time for it to happen because you and I, we've talked about SGA and his foul hunting, and you know the whistle's not as bad overall as some people think it is. It's still egregious. Like when you actually look at the free throws,
the touch fouls on the perimeter,
it is wild. Yeah. Now some people have tried to compare it to James Harden. Go look at James Harden's stats. In his prime. Not even close. He's like doubled SGA's free throws. James Harden was like attempting 700 free throws a year.
They changed the way they officiated.
Yeah,
because
it was Josh Hart was literally defending James Harden with his hands behind his back. But SGA, there was a specific play in the Pistons game where SGA leaned into somebody, hooked their arm, and then went up for the shot. So he's just, that cannot happen. It needs to be who initiates the contact. SGA a lot of times initiates the contact, but he does it in this sly way that the refs don't really see it, and it looks like he got fouled. It is an issue, and I will say I think that JB Bickerstaff was more than warranted to go on a rant because it's not just – we've talked about it a lot. It's not just about the calls that OKC gets. It's the calls that the Pistons aren't getting.
Yes.
And to your point, they are driving to the basket and attacking the whole time. They should be at the free throw line more than they are. That was a really bad game. When you go back and you watch it, when you see the highlights, you understand why he was so pissed off. Epic rant, 10 out of 10 by J.B. Bickerstaff.
Yeah, there's just a level of respect you have to treat every team with. You cannot respect the Thunder in calling fouls more than you do the Detroit Pistons. It needs to be refereed the same way. When it's not refereed on both sides, I think any single coach in the NBA has a right to do what J.B. Bickerstaff did.
Gabe, it's March, so there's only one thing we have to talk about. NIT drama.
Count your damn days, NIT. Did you see what happened?
What a debacle.
What an embarrassment. So, for those that have not been following, South Alabama got a call from the NCAA inviting them to the NIT at 9:30 last night on a Sunday. Because UC Riverside, who was really good this year, and, you know, had a chance to play in the NIT, they had committed to the CBI. They were told, though, South Alabama, that they were locked in 100%. They were going to play in the NIT. The NCAA called back, Dan Gavitt called back, about an hour later to let South Alabama know they no longer had a spot for them after South Alabama's head coach, Richie Riley, had already told his team they were in. So UC Riverside was double booked to the CBI and the NIT. They tried to invite South Alabama, and it fell through completely. South Alabama's not going to be playing in any postseason tournament, even after having a really solid year. Count your damn days, NIT. You can't double book like this. You can't go back on your word. You're already in a bad spot. The best teams in the country don't want to play in your tournament, but if you're spurning some teams that really want to play in your tournament that are in smaller conferences that want to be able to play in the National Invitational Tournament, you cannot screw around with them like this. You have made a bad name for yourself. There's no question about it. I'm embarrassed for them, and I really do feel bad for Richie Riley and South Alabama. They deserve better.
Oh, yeah, you feel awful for them. Something like this just shouldn't happen when it comes to postseason tournaments, especially if you're a postseason tournament that every single year is losing its luster a little bit, and then you have a debacle like this with a team that actually wants to be there. Ah, it's so embarrassing.
And Dan Gavitt, the vice president of the NCAA, put out a statement on behalf of the NIT. After the NIT bracket was released Sunday evening, it was brought to the NIT's attention that one of the teams scheduled...
it had to be brought to their attention.
Scheduled to participate in the tournament had also committed to a non-NCAA-affiliated postseason event. In an effort to secure another participating team, the NIT prematurely extended an invitation to the South Alabama Jaguars prior to learning that the original team chose to accept its invitation to the NIT. Regrettably, the NIT rescinded its invitation to South Alabama. We understand the emotional impact and the confusion this created, and we sincerely apologize to South Alabama head coach Richie Riley and all the student athletes for the air. Don't y'all have a chain of command?
Right.
Don't y'all have like somebody who can relay the message, hey, they're going to participate or they're not? How does this happen? How does it freaking happen? It is beyond me how the NCAA and the NIT screwed this up so badly. Now let's go ahead and grab a break, and we'll wrap up today's show with the Rewind next.